This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and of course, the MGO Blog crew back with us for the MGO Blog Roundtable. Glad to present to you Mr. Brian Cook. BC, good morning. How are you?
I am well.
That is good. That is good that you are well, because this month of June has been crazy. And on top of it, all these visits and all these, hopefully, maybe we'll start to see some commitments come in. You got your mag that you guys are working on too now, right?
Yep. I too I sympathize with the NCAA, who's got to, you know, get a huge project put together by July 1st that they feel like is not anywhere near prepared to be done. How would I know what that feels like?
You guys are pros. That's Seth Fisher's voice. You guys do a great job, and I have no doubt in whatever format you'll do a great job again this week. But things happen unexpectedly at times, right? And you got to adjust. And so that's what we're doing right now, because last week we had a discussion about point guards, right? Mm-hmm. And how is this going to play out? And you brought in Nick Bradley. Then you brought in Seth Trimble. Then you brought in Doug McDaniel. And Dougie, they say, really enjoyed his visit. Mom really enjoyed the visit. And he knows the score. He knows that these three guys have offers. He knows that Jaden is probably going to wait till September. But Seth Trimble is going to make his decision maybe in the next few weeks. And I'm not going to let anyone beat me to the punch. And here he is in the fold, a highly regarded point guard in the rankings. Tell me about what you guys think of his fit and how Michigan plays this recruiting of point guards.
Well, so he's probably the quickest guy in his class, right? So there's a lot of similarities between him and Frankie, like a little bit undersized, very adept at making plays for other guys. Frankie's a little bit bigger and has sort of a crazy vertical that Doug does not. Doug, you know, it's hard to tell so far because the numbers we get on his three-point shooting, or the sample sizes, are so low, but he certainly looks like a more capable shooter than Collins at this point, and he's a year younger. So, you know, for Collins is going to be able to go in the lane and get up at the rim and actually have a good chance of finishing. And for Doug, I think his swing skill is whether he can shoot behind the line, particularly off the dribble. So he's going to be a pick and roll guy, right? Pick and roll, pick and roll, pick and roll, pick and roll. And then if he can pull up behind the three-point line, then you really have a problem, because he's so quick that if you get out and you try to contest that, he's going to be by you. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of where he sits, like whether he's a starter, a high level player versus a bench guy who's useful, but it's a bench guy.
Mm-hmm. Seth?
I mean, he's a distributor first and foremost. And this is a guy that, you know, if you're going out and looking at your other players and recruiting other players, you kind of want to tell them, hey, you know, you're going to be playing with someone who knows how to get you the ball when you're, you know, as far as point guard is concerned. And that's one thing they can kind of sell with Doug. He's, you know, not big, and as Brian says, his shooting is really going to make a difference. I wish we had some stats on his free throw shooting, but I think like the only numbers we have are like, you know, out of 13 or something. It's just such low numbers, we can't tell, because that's going to, like Brian said, that's going to be a huge deal, whether he can make those threes. He's got the quickness, certainly. Like, you know, he can get that shot off, and he can go left out of, you know, just so fast that, like, he's so ambidextrous that he's going to be have that opportunity to go wherever he wants to. Plus, he really likes to get out on in transition, right? He's just a fast dude. So if you're playing with a whole bunch of big guys,
he can reject screens. Like, that's, I mean, he's a guy who can go either way, and has like a reputation as a guy who will stay in front of anybody defensively. So
yeah, he's the best. Yeah.
Yeah, like, so he's definitely going to be a long-term college player, and I think Frankie is probably going to be the same unless he really picks up his shooting. So it kind of feels like, where's the point on a basketball court where you really want veterans? Mm-hmm. Point guard.
Yeah, it's a great point. I agree with all these points. Maybe watching last night, I'm not comparing Doug McDaniel to Trae Young, but man, they played off of him on ball screens. Like, what are you freaking doing? Because he made him pay, seem like, every single time.
Right, and that's an open question for McDaniel. But, like, if he can do that, then the combination of his shooting and quickness will be a problem.
Right. So we got to see if he can shoot at that clip. But what I find interesting, a couple of things I find interesting with this recruitment. Number one, this wasn't a scenario where, you know, they stacked these point guards in a way where, you know, like, Doug is not a guy that they've liked for a long time. And so they placed him at the end because they, you know, this is a guy that we'll only take if the other guys don't come. Now, I do think they stacked him in order of, hey, this is who we like the most. I do believe that. But, I mean, they wouldn't even gotten to June visits if Doug McDaniel had committed back in the winter and spring when they thought he was going to commit. But at that time, you know, things that kind of slowed down, because you guys remember that Michigan was, like, mentioned as the leader. Things slowed down because the word was he was kind of questioning the depth chart. You know, you got Frankie coming in, who Devontae Jones does have a, it winds up, it got worse, the depth chart, because now Devontae Jones there, he does have a second year of eligibility if he wants to use it. Zeb is still around. He still factors in, and Kobe factors into that mix as well. But he came on a visit. Liked it a ton, and then ultimately decided I'm gonna bet on myself. He actually put that in his Twitter headline, bet on yourself, and that says something to me about him. A smaller cat quick guy that is, you know, seeing the depth chart and maybe had some concerns about it before, but wasn't gonna let anyone beat him to this punch. I like that in a demeanor, especially for a guy that might be a little vertically challenged.
Well, yeah, and you know, for a guy his size to be ranked where he is by, I think, all three services, more or less, is impressive. So, because he's got some natural limitations, he's probably never going to be a 60% finisher at the rim. That's just going to be a fact of life with him. But what else does he bring to your team? So if he's able to stay in front of any point guard in the country, if he's able to get a foot in the lane, get people to collapse on him and then kick out to guys, and, you know, Michigan's going to have some shooters surrounding this person. Like, this is not going to be a situation where you're kicking it out to a 30% shooter, most likely, right? Like, mm-hmm. Like Jet Howard's going to be on this team, you know? So there's going to be some dudes. And, like, if he draws attention, he's able to drop it off to a guy like, I don't know, Donovan Klingon. That seems like a good situation for Michigan. So, you know, I think that Juwan Howard has brought in the number one class in the country, right? But, like, he's got probably four multi-year college players in that class. So there's two guys who can be one and done, and then you're looking at guys who are probably here 2, 3, or 4 years. And what he started that class off with Will Shetter, and he's a similar situation where the first person in this class is probably a long-term college player. That gives you that stability, and that gives you that Villanova model where you have those five stars coming in, but they're not your whole program. So you have a Colin Gillespie or a Sadiq Bey, guys who are able to, like, really give you that one standout year and don't have to be one and done all the time.
Mm-hmm. I may have asked you, I'm pretty sure I asked you guys this back when the class signed, but I want to revisit it to see if your opinions are the same. When the dust settles, when the curtain falls on this class and we look back on it, and not the 20, I'm talking about the 21 class. Who do you think is going to be the best guy? Who turned out to be the best player? I ask that question because I just mentioned Kobe Bufkin factoring in at the one spot. Also, that is something that they are legitimately going to explore. That, hey, maybe he's going to factor in. He's going to at least be able to compete there. That dude, I've been saying Isaiah Barnes is going to be the best guy at the end of the day. and I'm starting to feel Kobe a lot more. I'm starting to feel like, man, you know, I remember talking to his AAU coach, you know, referring to him like I think he's a top 10 player in the country. I'm like, come on, man, he's your guy. I get it. And he does have a lot of upside, but do I really see that? And man, I got to tell you guys, I mean, his body is better. He looks stronger and he's getting bigger. He has some bounce, but his shooting touch as well, I think, has really, really continued to come along. I look at the combination of skills and I tell you what, I could see it being Kobe now. I might still side with Isaiah Barnes a little bit more because I've been on that one longer, but I'm warming up to Kobe.
Well, if we're talking about like who has the best college career, is that the question?
Who's going to be the best player? Who will have had the best college career?
So with like all like college war, like total up all of the everything right. That they give to Michigan. So yeah, like longevity look, matters then.
Yeah, and if you had 1 year, but you were like all Big Ten as a freshman and led lead Michigan to the Final Four. I mean, that's a hell of a career, right? So who will have been the best player? However you assess the best player from this class, whether it's whatever you goes into that for you, who do you think will be the best player from this class when all is said and done?
This is probably not right, but I'm still going with Frankie. Like, I just, I love that kid. Like, that kid is a stone cold winner. And I'm not the kind of person who says that, right? Like, I'm the person who's got, like, I got the numbers to say that the thing is good. But you just watch him play, and he's a lead guard. And he's a lead guard who, when it comes down to crunch time, it's not necessarily going to be him shooting, but he will get you in your offense and he will set the other guys up. And the fact that he's got that quickness and he's got that vertical, like, that's an uncommon combination. And if he can just figure out how to shoot some threes, like, that's a long-term college player who I think is going to be like a multi-year all Big Ten player.
Okay, so let me counter. Kobe can he's not a pure point guard, but Kobe can set up and he can already shoot.
Yeah, I hear you. Like, it's close, right? It's close. It's close between, and Barnes is going to have if Barnes is able to shoot, like, it looks like he's able to shoot. Like, if he's a 40% shooter at 6'6" and has that bounce, like, you're looking at GR3 who can actually like fill it up from long range. Like, that's a long-term college player who's going to be real good too.
Yeah. Okay. I kind of imagine Barnes is like his trajectory could go two ways, right? I think he could either pop it, like, you know, at the right time. And like, we get like great Barnes for like one run, right? Like the end of the season, all of a sudden he's great. And then he goes to the NBA because that talent, people are going to see it and people are going to see that athleticism and they're going to want him in the draft. Or he comes back for a year after that. And then we get like a full year of, you know, fully activated Barnes. And that could be incredible.
Well, I mean, Barnes is never going to be a ball dominant guy, right? Like, Bufkin is a guy who could be a 30% usage guy if he really hits. And Barnes is always going to be a guy who's absorbing shots and not really creating them. So he's more like a Zach Irvin or like an Isaiah Livers, where, like, yeah, he'll finish some stuff around the rim. And like, if you get him an oop, he'll be better at it than most of the shooter types Michigan's had previously. But he's a play finisher. Like Houston is a play finisher. Mm-hmm. So those guys are usually not like super high usage guys, unless they're like freshman Zach Irvin and he shoots literally everything he gets his hands on, which might be a good thing for Michigan.
So Seth, who would you go with?
I mean, it's the longevity question is such a big deal. I think, you know, if Frankie Collins plays for 3 or 4 years for Michigan, then like that's obvious, right? Like he could lead us to a couple tournaments, and guard play is so important in tournaments. Bufkin is just kind of a wild card because I know the least about him right now, right?
Well, Bufkin could blow up and like have a year and then go. And yeah, it feels like Collins is gonna be around just because of his size, right? Like
right.
The one particular limitation that is going to keep a guy in college, and I feel like that's a good thing for at least a couple guys in your class for them to have. Obvious flaws that the NBA is going to be like, nah, about.
Yeah, you know, this is a classic example of me downplaying what people have been saying about, because coaches are going to blow their players up, right? They're going to inflate. And I admit to doing that a little bit, kind of downplaying what coaches and guys who, you know, play against him regularly, what they say. But it's like, nah, man, you're starting to see and you're starting to hear from Michigan what they think the ways in which they think he could contribute. Like, I didn't factor Kobe Bufkin into the point guard mix. I was wrong.
Well, I mean, you know, he's a combo. So, like, are they going to need him at the one this year? Probably not.
Probably not. But
unless Devontae Jones does actually, like, get enough NBA interest to jump. But we should talk about Jones because, like, this is a guy who goes to this G League camp. And that floater was an 80 percentile floater last year. And the ways he's getting it off and actually sinking it, like, I think he's going to translate. Like, I don't know if he translates to the NBA level, but the way he's able to, like, his craftiness, his ability to get awkward shots off and put it down, like, I think he's going to be a guy who mostly ports his stats over from a lower level of competition.
Yeah, now he's had a good showing, but not, I mean, no one thinks he's going to, you aren't hearing anything about him making the jump, are you?
Well, he's said that, like, if he gets like a nibble, he's out the door, right? So he didn't get the invite to the full combine. I don't think that's likely to happen. I don't think year two is likely to happen either. But just, I mean, this is a guy from Coastal Carolina playing against a bunch of guys who are near NBA prospects. So they're going to be like the top of college basketball next year, most of them, right? And he is holding his own. So I think that's a really good sign for his ability to step into the starting lineup at Michigan and perform.
What did you think of Big Hunter showing?
It was good because it wasn't good enough, I guess.
Hey, Hunter, he was really pulling for you. He was really pulling for you. He wanted you to do well, Hunter, before you see this. He wants you to do it in a Michigan uniform. But
You know, he performed a lot like Hunter Dickinson, right? And we know what Hunter Dickinson looks like as an NBA prospect right now. And so if he gets in that weight room, he gets that three-point shot going, he leads Michigan to a national title. He's a first-rounder. Easy.
I mean, most people, I include myself in this thought that his game was not rounded out enough for NBA scouts to be like, yeah, we think you're ready right now. And I think that, you know, G League camp invite versus no combine invite is proof positive of that. So that bodes well for Michigan next season. And he said it, look, I felt like I wasn't a college student. Like, I feel like I haven't experienced Michigan. So it's I have a dual purpose in returning. We can change the ending of the story. Because he said, I definitely thought we were a championship team last year, and we got a lot of pieces back that can take us there, get us back in that place again. And then I want to experience Michigan. I didn't go to a football game. I didn't go to any parties or anything like that. You have that opportunity now to do it. The question is, fellas,
if you're hoping to find some good parties at the University of Michigan, I got news for you, Hunter.
Hey, man. A party versus no party. I think are going to be choosers at this point.
I think there are parties at the University of Michigan.
Yeah, I went to a few parties. They're great.
Here's the thing, guys. How do things look for Dwayne Washington and EJ Liddell? How about those?
I mean, they're in the same boat. I don't think that they're of huge interest to the NBA right now, and I think they're going to be
bad. Dwayne got an invite, though, didn't he?
He did. I mean, if he wants to go in the second round, he can do that. And some people do. Like, they just want to get on with it. I think I'm not going to count on something bad happen to Ohio State until it actually happens. And then, even then, I'm going to be, like, a little wary.
When's the last time an Ohio State guy had an option to go to the, like, who like, was, like, on the edge of going to the draft, decided to actually go to the draft, right? Those guys stick around. Chris Olave came back.
I don't think Chris Olave was eligible to leave. He's a true sophomore, I thought.
No, he was a junior this year.
Was he?
Yeah.
Well, nuts to that.
Yeah.
Right. So no, interesting exercise, of course. Wanted to get you guys' take on that. It looks like Michigan's going to have all of its, you know, all of its contingent of returning players, expected returning players, in addition to, of course, this great freshman class that are going to make them more athletic, going to have more shooting. Then I anticipate, I maybe underrated Kobe's shot a little bit. I think he's going to be more of a contributor as a freshman than I anticipated.
So there's a video that went up on YouTube recently of Bufkin playing Amani Bates in some sort of summer showcase thing. And if you were going to ask me who was the number one prospect in the class, I wouldn't have said Bates based on that video.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. Now, it's important to note that it was like pickup. It was like some old.
Right. Program. Yeah, it wasn't like still, regimented. But
still, right there, I saw the same one. Like, ooh. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's switch gears. I won't put too much. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be freshman of the year or anything like that, but I think he'll contribute for sure. I want to switch gears and get over into football as they have started to pick up guys. And I think some more guys are on the horizon, but the two that they picked up early in the week. So Aaron Alexander from Belleville, and then really interested in you guys' breakdown of CJ Stokes. An Aaron Alexander one, I think people had heard us talk about him going back to the Ferris camp because he really flashed the Ferris camp, ran really well. Then he came to Michigan and ran 2.44s at camp. He's 6'1", 205, runs 2.44s. It's like, man, if you could put that at linebacker position, you could do a lot worse. Why was his stock, his profile depressed? He thought he was a running back, like another former Belleville linebacker that ran, you know, 4.4, 4.5 coming out of high school. But this is a dude that Jermaine Crowell put his stamp on. And he doesn't put his stamp on every single guy. He put his stamp on this guy. So they took him. And then CJ Stokes. Now, our Steve Lorenz has had CJ Stokes high on the running back board for months. But it seems like people weren't really paying attention because when he committed, it was like, where did this guy come from? Why are they taking this guy when he was a priority for Michigan all along?
I mean, the big question there is, why did South Carolina, who had a coaching change in the middle of this thing, but like, how did they not own that guy? He goes to the same school that like all of their coaches go to, right? It's like the Pioneer High School of South Carolina. And they were in on him all the time. Like, you know, the coach's kids were on the team, obviously, so they had unlimited access to him. And then the new staff came in and didn't give him a committable offer, I think. So people are kind of like, well, what's going on here? And I think it was kind of both ways that, you know, he kind of told them, I'm kind of looking outside of the school and I don't want to just be a South Carolina guy. But I think a lot of schools, when they were looking at dudes to take, right, plays in this weird league. It's you know, it's one of the leagues that they created because they weren't allowed into the public schools because they didn't back then. This was one of the segregation schools. I mean, they changed all that. They changed that in the 80s. But, like, the league is still there, and it's weird. Like, it's just a bunch of small private schools that play each other. And this guy has been, like, the cover guy for that private school league for years now. So everyone's known about him in South Carolina, but I think everyone just kind of looked at that guy and goes, well, he's going to the Gamecocks.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of his game, though, of Stokes' game?
I mean, it's hard to tell against that competition. But there was one game I saw where he played against Columbia, Pennsylvania, which is, you know, all those guys, like Ohio State's got a 5-star off that team. We got a guy off Gage Garcia, that wrestler that we recruited. He was the running back on that team and was playing against him. So I got to see him against that level of competition. And I, you know, it kind of looked a little bit of a Blake Corum game to him.
He's got, yeah. You know,
keeps those knees turning. He's fast, but not like just blazing speed.
Well, Corum is blazing speed, but yeah, there's a reason that he's a 3-star and Corum was a top 100 guy.
Right, right. And a lot of the same people watching the same watching the two of them. But I mean, that's kind of the comp I would make. He was really interested in whether teams were going to use him as a receiver. You don't see a whole lot of that in this film, just because, you know, the coach's quarterback, the coach's son was the quarterback. But I like the pickup a lot. I love to see more of what he's got. But this is a guy that Michigan obviously really wanted. I think he was like the number two guy on their board for a long time. So I trust these guys' evaluations. You got Mike Hart and Jay Harbaugh, and neither one of them I think has missed on a running back before.
Yeah, this was a priority dude. And if you look at Mike's history, I mean, he has gone after guys that maybe – Stevie Scott comes immediately to mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who a lot of folks thought was a linebacker. Mike said, no, he's a running back. And he's going to be a pretty good one for me. It turned out he was right. He had top rushers at Eastern. He had top rushers at Western. And he wanted this dude. And to your point, you're right. I mean, you see them on film. Maybe it's just a few highlights, but you see them split them out and send them on downfield routes. And so I think that maybe is where that interest comes from. And You mentioned South Carolina spot, and I understand that question though, because one of the things that our guys at 24/7 pointed out is his dad works at South Carolina, and Eric in South Carolina mentioned that too here in the.
And his old coach joined the staff. His head coach is now like the tight ends coach at South Carolina. So like it's not like they didn't have their shot.
Right. So it does beg that question. But if you are looking for maybe a track record to buttress some confidence with, I would say Mike Hart's track record with running backs. Because he keeps a very narrow board. That's been his history.
Mm-hmm.
He had this guy as a top guy.
Yeah,
he had this guy. So
I mean, he reminds me of Hart a bit, right? Blake Corum is Hart but fast. Like that's exactly what we're talking about there. You know, like short, keeps those legs churning, just does not want to go down. But like Hart played in this like league in in New York that like everyone was like, okay, well he's running against these right? Who's he running? Who's he doing this against? And Hart's film, I mean, I've watched Hart's high school highlight film so many times just because it's ridiculous. But like it's the same story. He's just like he can set a guy up and just like run by him because you know he's playing a level of athlete that I could probably have played with, right? And
you with yes.
I could have been the backup lineman on some of these teams. Yeah.
So hey, but he obviously overcame because you're right. There were those questions. That's why when Mike Hart got here, it was Dave Underwood, it was Jerome Jackson, it was Max Martin. He had to go through three guys in order to be the guy because the questions between the size and the level of competition, people didn't think.
Yeah, the three guys he ended up having to go through, one of them got hurt, and one of them was kind of a ne'er-do-well. and then Underwood just fell over if you breathed on him, so it didn't take long.
and you're not giving any credit to Pierre Rembert. Who, remember that guy? He was on the team, yeah. Too. Yeah.
You guys are on fire this morning. I want to hear from
Dave. I think it was just Rembert, though.
it was, but we... Whatever. It's too perfect of a name to pronounce it that way.
I'll get a call from Mike. He's going to say, hey, I want to race Seth today. Well, we can race right now.
You know what? I'll race David Underwood. I raced David Underwood once. So that was,
you did?
I did. No. I did.
Seth, yep. No running. I don't want to have to replace another contributor.
Yep.
No running. All right.
Let's get on the elliptical.
Let's get to a break. A lot more to get to as Michigan picked up a quarterback yesterday. Victor's weekend happens. It really feels like they're on the cusp of some more additions. And then, hey, what? Lo and behold, the NCAA, they're going to have an NIL rule. Can you guys believe it? They're going to have an NIL rule in place in July. The NCAA could move so fast. We'll get to that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050. WTK, the ticket.
Yeah, I don't know if you've talked about the Alston case at all, but we could talk about that too if you wanted
to. Clear on the radio.
Clear on the radio, but still on the chat. Remember.
Correct. Still on. Reminder.
Eric Tolbert's got another guy in South Carolina he wants us to look at. Should we pay attention?
A few questions. No, again, let's get, we might miss out on Tatum. So my take is that is rubber meets the road moment with Michigan and Dillon. I think that he, you know, there was an impasse with, he's the one guy that there was an impasse with Klingscale because Klingscale didn't really recruit him at Kentucky. They viewed him as more of a running back so that he wasn't really on their radar. And in fairness, Kentucky wasn't on Dillon's radar. So they're kind of like passing ships. So when that move happened, it gave him pause, on something that absolutely was, I mean, the dude was going to pick Michigan, right? And so he wanted to get better acquainted with the coaches at that point. And meaning he wanted to get a better feel for Clint because who's Ron Bellamy is there, right? He's going to be coaching you 85% of the time, which was the response. But you want to get more connected with Clint, fine. And so some time has passed. The date that I've been pointing to is Victor's weekend. If you get to Victor's weekend and he's not committed already, or he does not have a date set up, then I would start to feel like that projection needs to, you know, it weakens significantly.
30 seconds till radio, guys.
To the point where maybe you start projecting him another way. Now, I'm not there yet because I'm hearing he may have a date. And so if he does have a date, then I'll feel confident in my projection. If I find out here in the next day or so that he doesn't, then you'll start to see me shift my confidence elsewhere. So that's kind of where I am with it.
I mean, do you want to be the, you know, greatest recruit in the history of Michigan State recruiting under or do you want to play with a bunch of guys who weren't
coming back on the radio, guys? Stand
second
by.
Place to you in the greatest Michigan State recruitment ever.
Coming back on radio in 5, 4, 3.
We have folks here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub, and the MGO Blog Roundtable crew. We have Brian Cook and Seth Fisher back with us. There's so much. We can't get everything in, so we can't just spend a ton of time, some more time on recruiting. Just Victor's weekend. You guys got any thoughts on Victor's weekend so far? What you think is on the horizon? Any impressions you get coming out of it?
Well, I mean, the quarterback they just picked up is kind of he has a low profile right now, but he's the kind of guy who I think his high school stats are pretty encouraging, just because accuracy at some point is accuracy, and he's got size. He's a riser. So I think he's a good pickup, and I think he might have some upward mobility because he's still a 3-star in 24/7, which I think is probably set to change.
I think they went down. So I think
did they?
Yeah, 24/7 and Rivals both had him way up in the 4-star range, and then they went down, and ESPN doesn't change their rankings. So I was looking at the guy, and I was looking at kind of how the recruitment played out, and you know, he's been to every single one of these camps. He was at every single Elite 11 thing, and
oh yeah,
they all kind of came away with the same thing. He's really big. They thought that he needed to lose weight, which. Anyone who looks at that guy and says he needs to lose weight, I'm in trouble.
But he has lost weight. I talked to Biggins yesterday. He said he's getting in better shape.
I believe it. But, like, the bad shape. If you look at the bad shape, if I could get to his bad shape once in my lifetime, I feel like I'd accomplish something. But he's got a slow release. When he does release it, he's accurate. He knows what he's doing. He's got... That quarterback's guru coach in California, that
Danny Hernandez.
Yeah, Danny Hernandez, that a lot of guys like. So, you know, I think that Michigan needed a quarterback. I think they missed out on Nate Johnson, and they were kind of focused on that guy. It's, you know, I'm just regurgitating things that Sam says. So, yeah, that was the position they were in. As far as like his scouting, you know, Wilton Spate, John Navar, that's kind of where I'm going with it. Mm-hmm.
Which is different, much different than Nate Johnson. Much different than Nate Johnson.
Hey, right? Denard and Navarre both wore number 16. So there's some similarity there.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit. And Brian mentioned something in the break that I talked to Mike Spath about yesterday. I just want to know how surprised you guys are by the news that Owen Power is leaning towards coming back to Michigan next season. I remember you guys saying, you know, most number one overall picks, they just go. So I imagine that means you're surprised.
Yeah. So in the history of college hockey, there has been one number one overall pick who played his D+1 year in college. That was Eric Johnson from Minnesota. So this would be only the second time this has ever happened. And I think, you know, you mentioned Hunter Dickinson kind of thought like that he didn't really get the full Michigan experience in year one. I think Owen Power has said stuff to that effect too. Like one of the reasons that you come to Michigan is you come to Michigan so you play in Yost Arena, and if Yost Arena is empty, are you really playing in Yost Ice Arena? So I feel like, you know, that whole experience, and the fact that he's a defenseman usually take a little bit longer to mature, but you know, he went to the World Championships with Canada and eventually was their highest ice time defenseman, right? So if Buffalo wanted him to, he could step in. But one thing that, you know, I think Buffalo would actually be smart to leave him in college is if you leave a guy in college, his UFA year gets pushed back a year. So if you're Buffalo and you're not going to do anything in 2021 and 2022, you should leave him in college because you're going to get a better draft pick the next year. And then you can take that high draft pick and pair him with Owen Power. And then both of those guys will have the same UFA date. So you, quit. You'll get that year, which is a much more valuable year than his year 19 year.
I mean, so, I've got news for you about Buffalo. They're going to get a high draft pick next year anyway.
Well, but what I'm saying is like, it's like, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense for them to like go along with this plan. And the thing is that like, you know, if Craig's source is right and they get these guys back, I mean, they have two guys who are late first round picks coming in this class. They have a third rounder from last year and Ethan Edwards coming in. You know, they lost Strauss Mann, but Eric Portillo is a third round pick and he'll be ready. And Pastyov is coming back. He's taking a COVID year, and so is Luke Morgan. So, you know, these guys, this looks like it should be the most loaded Michigan hockey roster I can remember. Now, we'll see what happens after the draft happens and if Beniers comes back, if Kent Johnson comes back, but, you know, Lord.
Yeah, Michigan's going to be a lot more fun to play at than Buffalo next year. I can tell you that. And I, you know, we've been talking about leaving guys in college. It's not there's a lot more precedent for the first overall pick being left in the AHL, right? Like I remember Marc-Andre Fleury, he was the best goalie in Pittsburgh's whole system and you know, would have been starting if he was in the NHL club, but like they just left him in the AHL because there's no reason to have your guy learning on the NHL is brutal.
Well, you can't actually do that anymore if it's a CHL team because they have a deal with the NHL so that if you're under 20, you can't play in the A.
Right.
You have to play in the NHL.
Right. Well, that's what I was getting at. That like that was an opportunity that they had before to develop some of these guys instead of just throwing them into the fire in the NHL. And, I mean, you do not want to ruin the first overall pick. So Buffalo has chances to leave him in college there and let him develop a little bit more.
If Owen Power wanted to play in the NHL next year, he'd play in the NHL. I don't think there's any question about that after the World Championship. So just the desire to like come back, play for this super loaded team, play it, you know, see where it goes. You know, I think this is going to be a potentially special Michigan hockey season, especially because like they didn't even get to play in the tournament this year, right? They got pulled out for COVID.
Right.
And it's like,
right.
Like how unsatisfied does that leave you? Yeah. Immensely.
Yeah. So it would be like the Fab Five all coming back then, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. And, if they had like a recruiting class under that was going to play. Cause like in hockey, if you have a third line that has a couple first rounders on it, that still counts in a way that like having a 10-minute backup, who's pretty good, doesn't really have the same impact in basketball. So, you know, their 1-9 forwards, their top four defensemen are going to be ridiculous.
Okay. All right. Good news there. Also good news. Let's shift gears to a topic that affects all college athletes, name, image, likeness, the NCAA coming up with a rule. I guess we can let's back it up a little bit more. That's something else that affects all college athletes. And that was the Supreme Court's decision against the NCAA and, you know, affirming a lower court ruling that said the NCAA was violating antitrust laws by placing limits on education related costs. Now this is focused very narrowly on things like you know, computers and maybe a stipend or a cash payment for academic achievement, and you know, you could do things like that. What is an education related cost? But I think the application of completely blowing up the idea of amateurism that the NCAA is based on, I think it has far-reaching applications and implications beyond this case. I'm curious what you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, that court case, the opinion released was like, I have a big bat, give me a pinata.
It was.
Just please give me a case where I can knock the rest of this house of cards down. Especially Kavanaugh's concurrence, which nobody else signed on to, probably because it was vehement. And but the actual opinion itself isn't really like the NCAA is like, well, only one justice agreed with that concurrence, but the actual opinion itself is no better for the NCAA. It's just a little less strident, and it knocks down all the rationales for amateurism that have been proposed. It says that like, no, consumers don't care about this, no, this would not be legal in any other field. So they struck it down and they invalidated a couple of lower court cases that were more friendly to the NCAA. And so really it's just a matter of time now, right? Like NIL is going to be here apparently in July because the NCAA is like, okay. I mean, so what happened is that there's a bunch of state legislators that passed legislation that got increasingly more aggressive. So California's bill doesn't apply until 2023. And then the SEC states are like, no, we're doing this now.
Oh, right.
We're doing it now.
Because it's a recruiting thing. We got to beat Michigan.
Right. And so like, so the NCAA is like, well, we're going to make this playing field relatively level. So if we're going to give you a couple of guidelines, like no boosters paying and no direct payments for athletic achievements. And then you can just do what you want to do in that realm. And I think Dior Johnson, who just committed to Oregon, said that one of the reasons he committed to Oregon is that the NIL deal that Oregon had presented him was better than what the NBL in Australia had. So, like, for a lot of kids, this is going to be a significant amount of money. And I welcome it because once that happens, I think opt-outs are going to be a lot rarer. I think guys headed for questionable draft prospects will be a lot rarer. Because, you know, if you're, I mean, let's say you're Iggy Brazdeikis, right? And you had 1 year at Michigan and it's looking like you're going to be the star of the team next year. And you can either go to the second round of the draft and G League, or you can make six digits easy from NIL at Michigan. That's a different equation. So I think you're going to see college basketball retain its players a lot better. And I think that's going to be better for the game.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that the NIL, I said this to Ira the other day, so they were in front of Congress begging them to come out with a federal law that would govern all of the institutions in the country. It wouldn't be piecemeal state by state. And then they felt like, you know, we need limits placed on this and you can place a limit on it, as if to say, if we do this, we know we're going to get sued and we're going to lose. But you know what Congress, if and when they do come out with a federal law, what they aren't going to have in there? I can't imagine they would place a limit on NIL earnings after what this Supreme Court decision that when it came to education-related costs, the mere idea of limiting the education-related costs, they said it was in violation of antitrust law. So I do not believe you're going to see them a lot. Here was an interesting point, though, in that decision that was made. It just dawned on me. They said, hey, if you as a conference, Big Ten, if you as a conference, SEC, if you want to put certain limits on whatever you want to talk about in terms of these education-related costs, if you want to have certain parameters there, you're free to do so. You're free to do so.
The no Lamborghini line.
Yeah, right? Yeah. you can obviously within the context of the current NCAA rules, you can have the no Lamborghini rule in there. But what you cannot do, Big Ten, what you cannot do, SEC, what you cannot do, Pac-12, is you guys all come together and come up with a rule that applies to all of intercollegiate athletics. You come up with a rule for your conference. You come up with a rule for your conference and you let the market determine it. Man, this is what we want at Michigan, right? This is what you want in the Big Ten. You should be able to come up with something really sweet that would be compelling for a student athlete that wants to stay within the rules, wants to earn some more based on their physical talent, earn some more. How about this for promoting academic achievement? How about that? You could say you make you get a 3.0, you get however many dollar bonus. So between that, and NIL, where a student athlete can make money off of their athletic achievements as well, this is the answer to the bag. It will not level the playing field with the bag, but it will be your answer. You actually have something that you can offer for, you know, those that are inclined to not want to take something below the table. This to me is how Michigan competes.
I wish there was some sort of comeuppance for the people who've held this off as long as they have, particularly like, you know, Ohio's passing this NIL bill right now, and it just flew through their Senate. because, hey, we can't let Michigan beat us, right? That's their motivation, and they're very clear about what their motivation is. And this is the state, and this is these are the people. Like, Gene Smith was the, like, guy facing – he was the one going to Washington on behalf of the NCAA and asking them to stop this, right? So all these guys who – have collaborated with each other in order to keep the current system in place, where the only way you can get paid is through the black market because we're the ones who control the black market. Those guys are not getting any comeuppance for it. There's no, like, do the players know who is screwing them? Do they know who is the guy, who are the people in charge of this?
Hey, man, I hear you. I wish that there was a reckoning. I wish there was the reckoning that you're looking for. I'll just settle for Michigan competing on a more level playing field. It'll never be totally level.
Well, I mean,
I'm gonna cheat anyway.
You know, I think the appeal of getting $1,000 in a like McDonald's bag doesn't really apply anymore, right? Like that stuff has always been small change, and that's why when people have tried to justify the system as it is, because if you want to cheat, you can just get away with it. Like those guys were getting shortchanged, like. Their value was much higher than whatever you could funnel under the table. So having it come over the table is going to make that kind of clandestine handshake stuff seem like small potatoes. And it's not really going to matter to people, I don't think.
I hope you're like, right.
I mean, the amount of money that you're going to be able to funnel to these guys over the table is going to be equivalent. I think the Dior Johnson number is over $1 million.
Yeah, there's now, still going to be moving. There's still going to be a lot of cash moving around because part of this economy is based off the fact that there's a lot of guys who have cash to spend and need to get rid of it.
There is, but if I mean, who's going to be the number one organization that is sponsoring these athletes? It's going to be Nike.
Yeah.
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 And are you going to compete with Nike? No. And where does Nike want guys to go? Michigan.
So you could get MJ on the line with Walter Nolan. Can they set that up? can you do that? Is that maybe a way to do that under NIL?
You know, I feel like the concerns about the under the table stuff is I mean, it's real, but I feel like pretty quickly we're going to find out like the power of one, the Michigan money cannon, and two, how much money there actually is in a lot of these guys for big corporations. And, you know, the guy who runs the auto dealership in Tuscaloosa isn't going to be able to compete with that. Now, you know, Alabama is going to be just fine. Look, don't get me wrong, but I think you're going to see a relative opening up of where recruits are able to go because the focus will be different and it will be a lot less difficult to get guys out of situations where the money is really, really important to them.
Yeah. And, you know, you would think, not that I expect this, but you would think with the opportunity to make money above board that you would make the penalties for cheating so severe, like death penalty, like severe.
Well,
you would think that would be the
you'd think, fine. But yeah, we'll see. I guess I do want to see Will Wade get absolutely nailed like the day after the NIL is okay.
Hey, man. Ira and I, we did an interview with Billy Embody, who writes for the LSU site. And we were talking about any potential punishments coming down. And he said in passing, you know, well, they would know that something was on the horizon because Mark Emmert is the AD's brother-in-law. And I was like, what? How is this not like common knowledge? It's like, are you kidding? And he just mentioned it like it was, everyone knows this. It's like, are you kidding me, man? Now doesn't it make sense that, hey, Will Wade was able to escape. He knows what's coming, when it's coming. LSU is fine. Still employing this guy. So, look, cheaters are going to cheat. There isn't going to be any comeuppance for the cheaters. Basically, to me, there is going to be at least now an alternative for someone who feels like they should be getting paid a fair rate for their value, right? For the value they bring to the institution, but they don't necessarily want to cheat. I mean, you're putting them in a position where if they need the money, you know, cheating is really the only way some of these student athletes and their families can get it. And I'm not advocating cheating. I just have never passed moral judgment. Well, I didn't pass moral judgment on Laramie Tunsil.
These guys deserve the money. They deserve every cent.
Remember Laramie Tunzel? He called like the AD and he said, "Hey man, my mom's lights are about to get turned off. What's up?"
Yeah.
Like, you said you're gonna pay our bills, kind of thing. I can't pass moral judgment on that. I won't pass moral judgment on that. But give them an give them a fair, legitimate, above board alternative, and you'll see a lot of people take that option. And I think that's why Michigan is going to have a more level playing field, not totally level, but more.
So. I wish there was a way that Michigan could demonstrate exactly what kind of advantage this is going to be for them, because this alumni network, you know, you do anything and the money comes, because let's be honest, the money's not just going to be, you know, earned by how much money you can do for my business, right? Like, you're not going to be getting exactly what the car dealership needs in order to, the minimum that they need to pay in order to, like, sell their products, right? Car dealerships in town are going to want to pay these players, and the NCAA, that's where a lot of this haggling is going on, is like, how do we differentiate in the market between I want a player versus I just want to conduct commerce? And the answer that's going to have to come up with is you can't.
$50,000 to wear an MGO blog hat once for 5 minutes.
I've been putting the fullback scholarship out there forever. I know we don't even have fullbacks anymore, but it's still open. We will sponsor any fullback at Michigan.
Yeah, it is. I think if they had one, it'd still be, what's the guy who went to Michigan State? I already forgot his name.
Van Sumeren?
Van Sumeren, yeah. We wound up moving. Anyway. All right, guys.
We need linebackers.
That'll do it for this edition. So anyone talk to Craig? How's Craig doing?
He's in Hawaii. He's good.
He's good? All right.
I think he's back next week.
All right, Craig. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing you guys again as well. To those of you who joined us on the stream, appreciate it. Folks, Ira and I will be back tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.